Welcome to today's sermon. This is Mike Adams, and we are continuing with 100 sermons in 100 days. And today, we've got something really special for you. We're talking about breath and air. We're talking about God's molecules in the atmosphere, including the molecule of life, which is carbon dioxide. And we're going to get into this in a very interesting way, which is from the book of Job. And the book of Job, I find to be one of the most fascinating books in the Bible. And the book of Job, as you know, it's about the debate over whether God issues out judgment correctly in the world. Like, God's running the whole world, and yet this man, Job, he is suffering apparently for no good reason. He believes he is innocent, and yet he has been made to suffer. And he is questioning God directly. He is even accusing God of either not being just or not being in control of the world. And of course, there are other wise men around him trying to answer these questions, including Elihu. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but who knows? Some of these names are difficult for Westerners to pronounce. But Elihu, E-L-I-H-U. Elihu is speaking to Job in verse 10 of Job chapter 34, so 34:10, and he's saying the following, quote, "So listen to me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God to do evil, from the Almighty to do wrong." He's saying God cannot do evil, and he's speaking to these wise men who are trying to explain things to Job, and Job is suffering and wondering, you know, what's going on? Why isn't God treating me correctly? Elihu goes on, he says, "He repays everyone for what they have done. He brings on them what their conduct deserves. It is unthinkable that God would do wrong, that the Almighty would pervert justice. Who appointed him over the earth? Who put him in charge of the whole world? If it were his intention, and he withdrew his spirit and breath, all humanity would perish together and mankind would return to dust." I find this to be a very powerful passage right here. It's poetry, actually, in the original text. But it's saying that regardless of what you think of God's judgment and how he dishes it out to people based on their deeds, in the big picture, it is God's breath of life that brings animation to all of us and all living creatures and beings and plants on this entire planet and perhaps beyond. That without God's breath of life or God's spirit, which sometimes, of course, in the Bible, breath and spirit are used interchangeably, and I think there's a reason for that, which I'll get into. But without God's spirit and breath, then we would all collapse into just dust. In other words, we would be nothing more than the physical materials, the proteins, the molecules, the minerals. Because, you know, physically, that's what the body is. It's just all these minerals and calcium and magnesium and water, you know, and creating then red blood cells and tissue and tendons and what have you. But without God's animating spirit and breath, you'd just be a pile of molecules. And it reminds me, a few years back, I saw some kind of science meme that was saying that an orange is nothing but all these chemicals, and it listed all the chemicals that are in the orange. You know, here's D-limonene for this, and here's, you know, like fructose, and it was like 25 chemicals, and they have very, you know, crazy chemical sounding names, and the meme was trying to say that chemicals aren't bad, and oranges are nothing but chemicals, and food is nothing but a bunch of chemicals. But it isn't, is it? Because if you went out and bought all those chemicals by themselves, and you got little bags of each one of those chemicals, and then you took all those chemicals and then you poured them into a pile, let's say, little pile, would you have an orange? The answer is no, you don't have an orange. Why? Because all those chemicals are not organized through God's vision of creation of what an orange should be. And so an orange is also blessed with the spirit and the breath of God. An orange is a living thing when it's on the orange tree, and the tree itself is a living thing. It says you are a living thing. And so it's only with God's Spirit that these so-called chemicals or components or proteins and molecules and minerals and whatever, that they become an organized system of life. And that's what science misses, by the way. Science thinks that you can break down a living being into all of its components and constituent parts. And if you can name all those parts, then you understand the being. And that's nonsense. You have no understanding of the being just by looking at all its parts. And there's a, I think, a pretty famous philosophical metaphor in all of this, which would be if you dissected a grand piano and you took all the piano parts and pieces and separated them. Oh, here's the white keys versus the black keys and the piano strings and the wood, you know, and the legs and everything about the piano. If you dissected it, where would you find the music? You know, where is Mozart in this piano pile of parts, you know? Well, there's no music in those parts, is there? Because the music is the animating spirit or the breath that is expressed through the physical components of a piano, just like your soul, your mind, your consciousness, that is the animating spirit that is expressed through the physical body. Yes, you have hands and feet, and you can move your limbs around, and you can move your lips, and you can speak, and you can open your eyes and see, and what have you. And I mean that literally, not metaphorically. But without the animating spirit inside, you are nothing but a pile of dust. And that is what Elihu is saying here, that if God were to withdraw his intention, if he withdrew his spirit and his breath, that all of humanity would perish together and mankind would return to dust, because there is no life without his intention and his spirit coursing through us. Now, importantly, God's spirit and breath is expressed through us and through our world through molecules. I mean, that's one of the ways. And we've spoken about other molecules that are healing molecules in the world of foods and nutrition and superfoods, neuroprotective molecules, cardioprotective molecules, hepatoprotective molecules, and so on. Some molecules protect your skin, your joints, your bones. Other molecules protect your eyesight, such as carotenoids, for example. And of course, there are antioxidants that protect you against genetic mutations that threaten the genetic code of humanity, which is a reflection of God, of God's intent, you know, God's blueprint for you. The genetic code is a reflection of God's intention. So now we have to look at then molecules outside of our body and outside the food supply, and this gets us to air, which is very closely tied to the idea of the breath of God, because the breath of God extends to the entire ecosystem of plants. And without plants, of course, we would all die. I mean, think about it. Without forests, without food crops, without farms, without whatever, you know, grasslands. And I mean, how would other animals get their food if not for the plants? And there are plants in the ocean, of course, that also rely on photosynthesis and carbon dioxide in order to grow and thrive, and that feeds the marine ecosystem that gives life to the ocean. So when you study atmospheric sciences or atmospheric chemistry, you realize that carbon dioxide is the molecule of life. It is the miracle molecule that represents the breath of God. And then, very quickly, you begin to realize that those who oppose carbon dioxide are, admittedly, themselves, they say they're at war with carbon. We are made of carbon. We are carbon-based life forms. Food crops are made of carbon. Animals are made of carbon. Trees are made of carbon. And you even see now the green climate groups cutting down trees and burying them and saying that's good for the planet, like cutting hundreds of thousands of acres of trees, saying that they are sequestering carbon because they're at war with carbon. And they're at war with carbon dioxide, which is the miracle molecule provided by God. And this is not a coincidence. So the climate agenda is opposed to the breath of life and the miracle molecules of God. The climate agenda is rooted in Satanism. That's right. The destruction of life on Earth, the destruction of the ecosystem, the destruction of humanity, the destruction of the food supply, of the plants and animals and everything that is on God's green earth, everything described in Genesis that God created, the climate agenda is trying to destroy. Now let's back up a little bit and cover photosynthesis and the miracles of God and creation and the breathing of life into plants. So photosynthesis, from a straight up science perspective, has three inputs. You probably already know this, but it's sunlight, it's carbon dioxide, and it's water. Now, isn't it interesting that, you know, sunlight, warmth, light, illumination, energy, you know, solar panels collect sunlight, obviously turn it into electrical voltage and, well, wattage and amperage as well. But in plants, when they combine carbon dioxide with water, then the sunlight creates bioenergy or botanical energy, essentially forms of sugars for plants to power the plant physiology. And then from that, the plants are able to synthesize all the amazing molecules that we've talked about before, including nutritional molecules, neuroprotective molecules, medicines. Natural medicines are created by plants from sunlight. So if you've ever wondered, you know, where do all these nutrients come from that I'm talking about that are God's miraculous nutrients? They are made from light. And how fitting is that? The light of God. God created the cosmos. God created the rules of physics, the laws of physics that allow hydrogen and helium to produce through fusion excess energy to have a giant glowing ball of fire in the sky and radiation that is taken up by the plants and turned into medicine. Isn't that amazing? But in order to make that happen, you have to have CO2. Now, those who oppose God and who oppose humanity, which is the climate agenda pushers today, they want to eliminate all carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And they are building large-scale projects that are called carbon sequestration projects that are designed to achieve exactly that. They are, in essence, sucking carbon out of the air and then pressurizing it into a liquid and then pumping that liquid through pipelines and storing it underground in order to deprive the world's forests and food crops and grasslands of that very important carbon dioxide. And this will reduce photosynthesis and it will reduce food crop production. And even mainstream science organizations like NASA admit that slightly rising levels of carbon dioxide over the last century or so are greening the earth. More carbon dioxide means more greening. You have deserts that are becoming so green now that many of the climate agenda pushers are suddenly screaming that we have to save the deserts, because the deserts are being turned into grasslands and forests in some cases. And so they're panicking over the disappearing deserts. You would think that transforming deserts into something that would grow food would be a positive thing, but, you know, not in the view of those who are Luciferians and who seek the destruction of all life on Earth. They love deserts because they're mostly dead. In addition, this is really important to understand, the climate pushers also, they're at war with the liquid phase of water. Now, you may remember this from high school science class or wherever you first learned this, but for most materials, there are, well, three common phases, and then there's a plasma phase on top of that, but we're not going to focus there. But the three common phases are solid, liquid, and gas. And so water exhibits these phases in very familiar forms. So as a solid, water is ice. You add heat to it, it becomes liquid. It melts, it becomes liquid, and then you have water. You add more heat to it, and you have steam or water vapor. It goes into a gas phase. And if I were to ask you a very simple question, which of these three phases is conducive to life on Earth? Think about it. Which phase? Solid, liquid, or gas promotes plants and food crops and dolphins and human beings. And, you know, it's obvious. It's the liquid phase. So when water is present, then you can have life on Earth. The carbon-based life form requires liquid water. Well, what phase do the climate pushers hate? They hate the water phase. They despise liquid water, and they're always fretting about it, saying there's too much liquid water because the ice is melting, they say. And, oh my goodness, the oceans might be rising a little bit. There's too much water on this planet, they say, and they think it's going to destroy the world. So what do they want? They want ice, the dead form of H2O. Because you can't plant crops in ice, can you? And you can't irrigate crops with ice. And if you have ice, you don't have liquid oceans and rivers and streams where you have bountiful life of all the creatures of the sea and all the fish in the rivers and in the lakes and ponds and what have you. None of that is possible if it's ice. And that's why the Luciferian climate agenda pushers, they love ice and they despise liquid water. So they are actually at war with a phase of H2O. They're at war with the liquid phase because that's the phase that promotes life. At the same time, they are, of course, at war with carbon dioxide, which I call it God's molecule in atmospheric chemistry, because carbon dioxide, of course, makes photosynthesis possible. And without carbon dioxide, we would not have plants or crops or rainforests or trees. By the way, do you know that with higher levels of carbon dioxide, you also get more flowers in the rainforest? And the flowers are very useful for pollinators. So higher levels of CO2 are very good for the planet. It results in more green areas. The deserts shrink. You get more flowers, more rainforests, expansion of grasslands, and you get more pollinators. So the insect biomass, which is really critical for the ecosystem, actually increases with higher levels of CO2. So those who are at war with CO2 are at war against pollinators and honeybees and bumblebees and what have you. They're at war against God. They're at war with life on Earth. They're at war with humanity. And again, they admit it blatantly. They say they are at war with carbon. It's a war on carbon. Those are their words. And a war on carbon is a war on carbon dioxide and a war on carbon-based life forms such as you and I. So when they say they are at war with carbon, you should believe them. They are admitting that they are Luciferians. They are on the side of Satan. Now, there may be some members of the climate agenda who, in their minds and hearts, they might at first believe that they are trying to save the planet. But if those people exist, they have been deceived and they have failed the test of discernment. If your activities are designed to save the planet and green the planet, then why are you eliminating the molecule that makes the planet green, right? It makes no sense whatsoever. And it shows how deceptive Satan can be by recruiting loads of people to try to destroy the planet and destroy life as we know it on this planet, and yet tell them that they are saving the planet. And then they talk about a climate emergency and that humanity is the problem. So all of God's children are to blame, they say, for this so-called climate emergency. And then they begin to advocate things like depopulation, abortion, euthanasia, and other forms of murdering God's children, which they think will bring the planet back into balance. And I say, beware of any movement whose final solution relies on the mass killing of fellow human beings. That's probably not a good group to follow. Now, getting back to Job, which again, I find to be really fascinating, and we'll discuss it in other sermons, no doubt, just because of the philosophical implications of what's being talked about in the book of Job. But when the scripture says that if God withdraws his breath, that all life on earth would fall into dust, I believe that God's breath is expressed through chemistry, that all the laws of chemistry and physics are representations of God's will or God's animating spirit, God's gift of consciousness and life, which is something that science cannot quite define. because, again, as I mentioned earlier, scientists can break down life forms into their constituents and components, but science still can't define life or even recreate it or reorganize it in the way that God can. Now, once we realize that carbon dioxide is the miracle molecule of the atmosphere, and then we realize that the atmosphere is Earth's lungs. So the atmosphere is involved in respiration. The atmosphere is exchanging air and molecules with all the living beings on the planet, humans, animals, plants, ocean creatures, and so on. So if we think that the lungs of the earth are the atmosphere, then when God is breathing life into the earth, going back to Genesis and creating everything on earth, then we realize that the breath of God, the spirit of God, must include carbon dioxide, because historically, carbon dioxide has existed on planet Earth at significantly higher levels than where it is today. In fact, in the history of Earth, according to ice cores and even according to mainstream science, carbon dioxide was, at some periods, way more than 10,000 parts per million, and even higher, significantly higher. And today, it's barely above 400 parts per million. Our planet would look more lush, more green. We would have more water. We would have, instead of deserts, we would have food crops and abundant farms and natural abundance all over the planet in almost every area, including in many barren areas today of Africa or the Middle East or parts of East Asia that have suffered from a lot of desertification over many years. Carbon dioxide levels rising is a great gift to life on Earth. And in fact, it will increase rainfall in many areas as the oceans are slightly warmed. Warmer oceans result in more evaporation of water, which results in more rainfall inland in the continents in areas that currently suffer from very, very dry climate conditions that, of course, are not conducive to, you know, growing food crops or even living in some cases. And it's very clear that there are times in Earth's past when the environment was much more lush, it was more green, it was more abundant. And if you're wondering, for example, about the fossil record, it shows that in many areas, it's very clear that the ocean was much, much higher in the past. Why are there ocean fossils, you know, 50 feet above current sea level? Or why are fossils of ancient creatures like the dinosaurs, why do they show that these dinosaurs lived in areas that were very lush and green and abundant in natural flora, even though the places where those bones are found today appear to be very dry, near desert conditions? And the answer is quite clear, again, because carbon dioxide was much higher in Earth's past. And if it were to return to much higher levels, then Earth would be far more abundant in terms of food and being able to support life and having natural rainfall, which helps, of course, irrigate crops and so on. So if the atmosphere is Earth's lungs and God is breathing life into Earth, then he breathed carbon dioxide into the atmospheric chemistry as the molecule of life. And in every breath that we inhale, by the way, we also inhale that same carbon dioxide. We don't use it, however. We exhale the carbon dioxide. And in fact, we exhale extra carbon dioxide because, of course, we inhale oxygen, exhale more CO2 than what we inhaled. And then that CO2 is able to be used by plants. And then plants, of course, take in the CO2 and then they give off oxygen, which means they're keeping the carbon. So what are the plants doing with the carbon that they're keeping? This is critical to understand. The carbon becomes the nutrients. Because if you look up, what is vitamin C? Vitamin C consists of only three elements: carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. CHO. And there's a website you can go to called chemspider.com, C-H-E-M, like chemistry, chemspider.com. And you can enter there any molecule that you want, like vitamin C or ascorbic acid, or you can put in, you know, an antioxidant you want, or enter astaxanthin or what have you. And what you're going to find is that all the healing nutrients, the miraculous medicines found in plants, created through God and Mother Nature in order to help humanity to be well and to be abundant and to be cognitively alert and to have healthy fertility and healthy children and to reproduce and to populate this earth, all of those molecules are made out of carbon. It's the same carbon that you exhaled. It went into a plant. That plant used the carbon and it built its own structures. It built its stems and roots and leaves. It built its fruit or seeds or pollen or whatever it is, whatever kind of herb or fruit tree or nut or whatever it happened to be. It used carbon to build those structures. And then that carbon became medicine. You see how amazing this is? The miracles of God and Mother Nature expressed through plants using carbon dioxide to engineer powerful medicines. And this is why, again, the climate agenda, or those who are part of the climate cult, they oppose carbon because they are not about natural medicine or God's medicine. They are all about synthetic man-made medicine. That's why they promote pharmaceuticals and vaccines and bioweapons designed to achieve depopulation and extermination of humanity. They're at war with carbon. They're at war with liquid water. They are at war with the atmosphere, the lungs of the earth. And they are at war with God. And we need to be bold on this point. There is no person who can be in alignment with the teachings of God and Christ who is also at war with carbon. For the reasons I have explained here, carbon is essential to the flourishing of life and medicine, abundance and health on this planet. So anybody who says they're in favor of carbon sequestration, they might as well be admitting that they are working for Satan, that that's their mission. They're trying to destroy life on Earth. And many of them claim to be driven by science. Yeah, the same science that pushed the vaccine jabs that are rooted in depopulation and mass extermination and infertility and stillbirths and spontaneous abortion and all these other things that happened after the jabs were widely distributed. So it's not a surprise. Those who promote death to humanity, yes, they are also at war with carbon. It's perfectly aligned with their anti-life, anti-human, anti-God belief systems. So when they tell you who they are, believe them. They are at war with God because they are on Satan's team, and Satan will not prevail because God's miracles cannot be defeated. So if you're on the side of carbon dioxide and the side of life, you're on the side of God and God's intention for this planet. Thank you for tuning in to today's sermon. I'm Mike Adams. I hope you learned something and gained inspiration from this talk. We have many other sermons that can also provide you with words of wisdom and inspiration, I believe. So be sure to check all of those out at the same place where you found this sermon. God bless you all. I'm Mike Adams. Take care.